So tickt Berlin. Dein Podcast von und mit Nikolai Tegeler.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer brandneuen Ausgabe von So tickt Berlin. Und ich bin heute bei meinem Gast zu Hause in Pankow. Und zwar im Stadtteil Niederschönhausen. Und das ist so witzig, weil ich war tatsächlich schon ein paar Mal in Pankow, aber noch nie so richtig in Niederschönhausen. Es ist ein wunderschöner herbstlicher Tag. Die Sonne scheint, es ist blauer Himmel. Und ich komme hierher wie in einer, ja, es ist ein bisschen wie eine andere Welt. Und unser heutiger Gast ist, ja, ich weiß gar nicht, wo ich anfangen soll. Er ist Schauspieler, er ist Maler, er ist Künstler, er ist Lebenskünstler. Er hat so viel in seinem Leben auch schon gemacht und getan. Und das Witzige, was ich finde, er kam quasi aus Alabama, Talladega. Ich hoffe, ich sage es richtig, werden wir gleich nochmal sprechen. Und er ist quasi nach Pankow umgezogen. Das ist schon mal Weg, den man ja erstmal gehen muss als Amerikaner. Die meisten verirren sich erst weder in München, Berlin, Hamburg oder sonst wo, aber nicht in Pankow, Niederschönhausen. Herzlich willkommen, welcome, Jeff!
Hello, hello, hello.
This is fucking cool. I mean, you need to explain us. How do you come from, I mean, have you ever been, I mean, you still live in Berlin. I mean, right. Pankow is a district of Berlin.
Sure.
But how could you come up with Pankow?
When I first moved to Germany in 2016, I was in like this very small village for the first 2.5 years here. And the plan was to go back to the States after that. First couple of years of my son's life here, who was born in the States, but his mother's German. Uh-huh. But I really enjoyed the countryside. Uh-huh. Of Germany, because I relate to that in Alabama, you know, it's like, I like space, I like calm, I like small town people, even though you're not going to have like mind boggling conversations, but I love the calmness. So, but when I moved to Berlin, in 2018, because I got into the industry here, I lived in Prenzlauer.
Ah.
So I got to know Berlin quite well.
Uh-huh.
Needed a break right after COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I got another place in Iseloid. And then when I chose to come back here, I was like, you know what? I do love Berlin. It's going to be a good return, but I'm going to be a little bit outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
I need a little bit of like sort of that small village kind of peace and quiet.
Yeah.
But then the city's literally right there.
Yeah.
So I love it. Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, this is so typical Berlin for me because I grew up and I was born and raised in, I'm born and raised in Berlin. And mm-hmm. It's so because we just call it Kiez, you know, this, you don't want to break through your Kiez. I mean, right. You always stay in your district and that's it, you know,
okay.
This is so un-fucking believable to, you know, I told you when I come to visit you here and I said, hey, this is a little cruise from Charlottenburg to come over to Pankow.
Yeah.
But of course, I really enjoyed that. So thank you very much to have me in your apartment. You still live here for almost...
Only a little over a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This particular flat. Because I got my other place in Illinois and I spent a lot of time in the States for a little while. And I enjoy to bounce around, honestly. I enjoy, moving.
So let's start. I mean, I prepared myself really because it's so, you're such an great character. You're such an individual person. I mean, you got this mystical thing on you and I'm really interested to get more about you. I mean, you were born in Talladega. Is it right pronounced?
Alabama? It's pronounced many different ways depending where you are in the States.
Of course.
We as Talladegians would say Talladega.
Talladega. Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So what was your first real encounter with the arts and when did you know the acting was your personal path?
Well, that's an interesting question because that this is a two-part answer,
yes,
I think.
Yes, definitely.
I think I discovered the arts itself very early.
Uh-huh.
My mother was like a art teacher, uh-huh, art instructor for kids. And as a kid myself, my mother always was a very creative energy. And I was very inspired by movies as a kid.
Ah, cool.
I remember seeing the first Superman movie, like the
Christopher Reeve.
Yeah. And I was wearing my pajamas with my little cape afterwards. And I was watching the movie. It's the first time I'd watched it. I watched it on those big old, I think the TV was even black and white at the time. And right after watching it, like, I thought I was Superman. Whatever came through the TV, I just felt that energy.
Yeah.
So I was really excited about that. I think I was like, I don't know, 4 years old. And I walked to my bedroom feeling like Superman. I climbed up on the bunk bed.
Yeah.
That we had, and I had my cape on, and I'm like, I'm Superman, I can fly. So I dove off the top and dove right into a toy box. I've got a scar here to this day. And my mother came in the room, there was blood everywhere. Luckily the toys missed my eyes and it hit me right there. But for me, that's my earliest remember of feeling the passion. I really felt the fashion. And that was my earliest memory of being inspired. And then as I got a little bit older, I would take kids in the neighborhood and my friends and everything, and be like, oh, we just watched a movie or something and I want to reenact it. So I'd get everybody to play a part. And my mom had this big 1980s camera. She always played the camera woman. And I would do all the parts nobody wanted else to do. So that being said, I discovered it very early in life, and I think that played a huge part later in life.
Yeah,
because as I got even a little bit older than that, because I was in a small town in Alabama, they didn't really have the resources to nurture arts. There wasn't any like drama class. There was not even an art class in my high school. I didn't really do well at school, mostly because I just wasn't interested, you know? So I kind of just like lazied myself through school, and then I, you know, I didn't think school was for me and this, that, and the other. My dad owned a tire shop.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked in an auto mechanic shop right after high school. And I did that for the next 10 years, you know.
Wow.
Me and my brother started a band.
Oh, you got a sibling. You have a brother.
Yeah, I have a brother, younger brother, and he's a really good musician, self-taught. Everything we've ever done in our lives is self-taught. but, you know, he played guitar. I picked up a bass. We played in a band those early years when I was working at the mechanic shop. We were doing quite well, you know, but keeping a band together is pretty difficult, especially when you're brothers, you know. And there were other things that creeped into that kind of, and we, again, like I said, we were doing quite well.
What is he doing now? Is he still living in?
He's still in Alabama. He's still playing music.
And, wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
He's still at it and very creative. I'll say that my little brother has more talent in his pinky than I do in my whole body. I always said that. He's very talented.
Wow.
So again, I've been kind of a dreamer my whole life. I get very unsettled by normal lifestyles. It's quite terrifying for me to even stay in some place a long period of time. I get anxious, you know, and we'll get into this later, but I change my art mediums quite frequently.
Yeah.
Like I change my furniture around the house. Like I literally, things for me always have to be in constant motion and constant evolution or de-evolution. Sometimes you got to go backwards to go forward.
Yeah.
But I need constant movement in life. I get really freaked out by things staying in its place.
Yeah.
But yeah, my reintroduction to the arts, to acting in particular, is they were doing a movie. I'm from Talladega. They were doing a movie called Talladega Nights with Will Ferrell, this big NASCAR comedy, because NASCAR is really big where I was from, because we have a big track.
Yeah.
And I was working at my dad's shop, bartending at a bar on the weekends.
Wow.
And, you know, kind of in a stagnant place. But they did the movie. I got really excited about it. They put it across the radio that they were hiring the thousands of extras because fans and whatever. So I drove to Birmingham, Alabama. I went to what we called a cattle call. There was like hundreds of people there to be an extra. And I signed up and didn't hear anything for a couple months. And I got a phone call that I'd been chosen to not only be an extra, but to be a featured actor. I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
But I got to be on a pit crew team of Sacha Cohen Baron, comedian.
Yeah.
And I got to be on his pit crew team as a car. And it was, so I was got to be on a big movie set that shot in my hometown, which is ironic. It's almost like Hollywood came to me.
Yeah.
In a weird way. I hesitate to say that because it's school ever. But I got on set and I was like, whatever my childhood that I spoke about earlier. Of getting everybody together and being inspired by Superman and all that stuff came rushing back to me. And I'm like, you don't have to be a kid and a dreamer. Like, people live their lives this way.
Yeah.
And I was like, whatever this is, never been to drama school, never been to actor school. I lived from paycheck to paycheck. Like, didn't do good at school. I had everything against me. I don't care. Whatever this is.
So cool.
I'm going to do this.
I like that.
And this gave me my reintroduction and, ooh, it was a long, crazy journey from there on, but I found my way there.
Cool. Yeah. I really liked it. I mean, there was like a press conference with Russell Crowe, and you used to work with him as well.
Yes.
Some of them asked him, hey, Russell Crowe, have you ever heard about the Stanislavski method? Have you ever been to a drama school? And he said, no, the only school is the Russell Crowe school. Next to him, I don't know, maybe it was, no, it wasn't Eisenhower, it was, I forgot his name, Jesus Christ, sometimes, Ryan Gosling.
Okay, yeah.
And he said, oh my, no, you destroyed 100 years of drama school education, yeah, with that. I mean, but he's so true, and you see, I mean, you did it in your personal life. I mean, it's not necessary. You have to have it into you. I mean, this is what you want, and if you feel it, you got the sense of that. I mean, you are an actor, nothing more. No one tells you you're an actor. You're an actor. And one big question. I mean, I told you when we had our little pre-chat about that, that I really like your attitude. I mean, you're so grounded. You used to work with the different kind of big stars. You did great movies. I mean, I told you you worked with Ethan Hawke, with Russell Crowe. You did big productions as well. Was it helpful that you still worked by your father's company, or was it helpful that you? I mean, you act like a normal guy. You're not like snobby. Yeah, but this is so good. I liked it.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a great question. And it's, yes, I do feel very grounded, and it's a good thing. And it's sometimes it's not a good thing, because I'll say that, I think it does come from like a humble background. Of kind of how I grew up. My parents were both loving, but, you know, they had to work really hard for what they had.
Yeah.
And same for myself. Like, I didn't have the fortunes to, oh, you like this? Let's put you in the school. Let's nurture this. You know, I didn't get that. So, I guess it's sort of like a humble structure that comes from it. But when I say there's a negative side to that, is like, my perspective in all forms of art and all forms of life is that we all look each other in the eye. We're all level. So therefore I treat everybody exactly the same, but I think it's very important. But the bad part of that is, like, I also expect that from everything around me. I have zero tolerance for hierarchy. Like, I don't care what somebody else has done, what they're a part of, what kind of producer they are, I have zero tolerance for their bullshit.
Cool.
Like, you know, so it's like, sometimes I wish I had a little bit more tolerance. It's particularly in the world of filmmaking where there is a lot of unfortunate egos. I'm very sensitive, and it takes a lot of my energy away when I have to be around people that they're sort of like vampires as far as energy vampires. And it's so I really enjoy being around people that are like myself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing more inspiring than when people look each other in their eye, no matter who they are, mm-hmm. what they've done, or where they come from.
Yeah.
And we share the same passions. It's literally the most inspiring thing in the world. But the moment I get around somebody with ego, I'm way too sensitive for that.
It really
messes up my vibe, and I don't like it. So, like I said, there's like all life, there's a dark and light to that. And but yeah, it's I'm very fortunate, I can say that.
You've worked in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. Atlanta, and now you're in Berlin. Three very different creative worlds. Mm-hmm. How would you describe the artistic spirit of each city?
Another great question. I love it. Yes, LA was my drastic move, you know, after I did Talladega Nights and I did some other independent films, and, you know, I kind of worked my way in the back door doing more extra work, and I started being a stand-in and this, that, and the other. But then I just decided to just move to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And which was, I remember having the conversation with my father. Say, Dad, he wanted me to take over the shop. And he said, Dad, you know, Dad, I'm going to go be an actor. I'm going to move to Los Angeles. And he thought I was crazy, which I was crazy. But I moved there, and at first I was, it's LA, man. That's like, you know, it's
movie land.
It's movie land. And, you know, somebody being from Alabama, and I'm sure the rest of the world are painting this picture of what LA is.
Yeah.
Really great people, but it's full of that ego. It's really full of that ego. At least it was back then. And, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. I got really lucky. I earned my Screen Actors Guild quite fast. I got cast to play a young Ray Liotta in a movie called Powder Blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my SAG card really fast, which was unique. My of course, like every actor, they cut my stuff completely from the movie, mm-hmm. but I got the union status, so it didn't matter. The first year was great. The second year, because of the writer's strike and everything, was very difficult. And again, like everybody, I'm too sensitive. Like I said, it was a mentality that I didn't like. So I moved to Atlanta, where basically Hollywood moved after the writer's strike anyway. And for me, it was kind of a new place. Hollywood was settling into Atlanta. And I liked that new, fresh energy. It was a lot more humble. Mm-hmm. There was a lot less ego. Mm-hmm. I was close to my family. Atlanta's in the South, but it's not the South. It's like an alien ship land. So for me, it's like the perfect world. When you have like humble surroundings around a lot of energy, it's like my perfect spot. So I think Atlanta for me was more nurturing.
Mm.
I got to make really good connections and find myself. I was really lucky because I was mostly a stand-in,
mm-hmm.
the time I was there. But I mean, I built a reputation to be a stand-in, which is, I don't know if that's a reputation you want to build, but that's the reputation I was building.
Yeah.
But there was people asking me. I stood in for Robert De Niro, two different films. I did... Colin Farrell, Kevin Bacon, there's so many actors, Paul Rudd. I even remember being requested by Tom Cruise. And that was one of the last things that I did after I'd stopped standing in. But what I really liked about that experience is like, that was my school, man.
Mm.
Like I got to go there and watch how the machine worked from the inside. They paid me to do it. And not only did I get to do that, I got to pick the brains of like the best artist, in my opinion. Like I got to talk to Anthony Hopkins about how he reads scripts and he retains things. And I got to talk to Bob De Niro about, you know, watching him put more energy into an egg he was peeling than the actor he was working in. I thought that was fascinating. And I was like, so I learned, again, a very humble way.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't move to Hollywood and book something. And like, I think my ego would have went a completely different direction. Like, I don't think I would have been able to handle it.
Yeah.
But again, I had to really bust my ass through this business.
Yeah.
And I had to play down the hierarchy thing and block that out, but just be very appreciative of where I was and what I took from that. And and again, I just took all that information and like this is the best school that I ever could have done. And then, okay, fast forward to Berlin. What I love about Europe in general, artistically, is it's so wide open.
Uh-huh.
The passion is just so much, for me, it's more genuine.
Uh-huh.
There's less, because I feel like in LA and even Atlanta, there's one goal and everybody, if you're an actor, you're an actor and you're just thriving toward it. And everything you do in life, your weekend plans, the people you hang out with, everything is eye on the prize.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
What I love about Europe is just all over the place. And that's more like me. That's like more like my true self.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is a lot of frustrating things about Europe, particularly Germany. This comes down to the union stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from like creative nurturing and I love it here.
Mm-hmm.
I love it here. It's not built well for artists to survive, unfortunately, but to thrive and to grow, you know, it depends on what you want more.
Mm.
Do you want to be financially successful or do you want to be morphed into the best artist you can be by suffering?
Yeah.
Come to Europe. that's how I would describe the three. LA was very artificial. Atlanta was very nurturing and more balanced. And Berlin particularly is extremely nurturing in a creative way, but definitely not in a financial way. So
I tell you, it's poor and sexy. Our last mayor said to our city, he said, this is poor and sexy. I mean, have you ever been to Berlin before the wall?
No,
came down. No, never. Okay. So, but what's your impression to Berlin? I mean, because this, you know, it's called Zotik Berlin. Mm-hmm. You told me that you like the city in one way, but you really like to live here in Pankow because it's not the heart of the city. It's more the countryside of the city.
Sure. Well, I think it's back to who I am and how I fit with it. Like I said, I'm very sensitive and very empathetic, like too much. And this city is, of all the cities I've ever visited in my life, of all the places, Berlin is the most energetic. I really, like, as Americans are always, well, we were always taught that Amsterdam was this luscious, vibrant, artistic land of whatever. Like, we always thought that of Amsterdam. And I remember when I first came to Europe, I need to get my ass to Amsterdam.
I know.
I would feel this. And I got there, I was like, it was cool. It's cool. Like, I love the Dutch. I love, you know, but I wasn't overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I was creative. I expected so much more. And to be honest with you, like, aside from the war, Americans are never taught about Berlin.
Like, oh, really?
Berlin is Berlin, the wall and the war. That's it.
Yeah, that's
all we know about Berlin. So we can't, even my partner at the time, she's German and she had only been to Berlin maybe once.
Oh, wow.
She was young. So there had no, she knew nothing of Berlin really. And I remember, I forgot why we came here, but we took our first parents' weekend away from our kid and we took a train to Berlin.
Uh-huh.
And this comes down to me being so sensitive. I got off the train here and I looked at my wife and I said, what the fuck is this? I was like, what is this place?
Jesus, yeah.
And I was just like, this is amazing.
Oh, really?
I literally just felt it.
Wow, there. Really? Wow.
And I instantly fell in love. We went around. I got my first ticket for not having a ticket on the train. That was my introduction as well, because we were literally lost. We didn't know what we were doing. And but this city was everything I imagined Amsterdam would be and more.
Wow.
That's to hear.
The
man.
People, the is just, and it really is the most vibrant, energetic city. Now, we came in the summer dust. So it changes from January to like April. It's not this place I'm describing right now.
Yeah.
But this is why you need to get out.
Yeah.
But I over time I was like, I could see myself staying in Europe longer simply because of Berlin.
Wow.
But it's funny because I met, this is going to be a Beetlejuice reference, if you know the old movie Beetlejuice, but I remember meeting some people here at some random parties and stuff, and they were just like, they just looked like they were just been attacked by a vampire. They had no energy there or whatever. And here I was freshly here being like, this place is amazing. It's so cool to meet you and these people, and everybody's an artist and everybody's this. And they were just like, I need out. I can't, they just look completely drained. And I just didn't get it. I'm like, I just want in. They're like, I just want out. You know, it's, but then when I moved here and spent my first solid time here, I completely understood. It's like, because the energy is so high and so great, it's just, it's like running. Like when you run, it's really great. But after a while, you're just exhausted from it. And that's how I feel. Like it's great, but it's too much. So I need breaks.
Definitely. Yeah. This is so, I mean, for me, you know, I told you I'm born and raised in Berlin. It's always like when I'm in Berlin, I really like to leave the city.
Yeah.
Always. And when I'm somewhere, mm-hmm. I still miss Berlin. So this is.
I love coming back. Coming back is amazing. So I've learned a balance. I live right outside and I found my balance.
I have to look for one little translation, so give me one more second, and now of course I can't find that. Oh. I'm sorry.
No.
Jesus Christ. Give me 1 second. It's always the same. I was really prepared and this is what I
I'm trying to give you short answers because I had this tendency to get into a storytelling thing. It's just kind of who I am.
No, it's great.
I think it's a Southern thing where we're from too in the South. We're storytellers. Like we're known to sit around a rocking chair and talk.
Definitely. And I really like to, okay. Let's jump back to your acting. Your acting part of your acting life. Sure. I mean, when you step onto a set, what's the first thing you need to feel home as an actor? I mean, you saw different kind of big sets, small sets.
It's pretty universal. Uh-huh. Small or big, it goes back to what I'll probably circle around this a lot. It's the energy that I feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's how people are treating each other and if it's genuine, and yeah, that's my thing.
Great. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. So it's great because I feel you in so many different kind of ways. And I mean, we grew up in totally different states, but I feel you. And this is so great because this is always the way I like to look into the world.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let's jump into your other steps. I mean, there's so many things we have to discuss, and I really enjoy to listen to you. I mean, you've always established yourself as a visual artist and creating large scale murals since 2015. Is that right?
No, 2000, actually 2022. 2, 3.
Oh, okay, good, good, okay, okay. But the question is, how did you how did that artistic side emerge for you?
Nurturement, something else I'm going to go back to quite a bit. My mother was an artist, like I said.
Yeah.
And my, as I'm already mentioned, that my brother was, I always thought my brother was a talented one and I just missed it. You know, my brother got all the talent because he used to draw a lot, and I doodled my name, but that was it. But early on, like I said, I discovered the arts in a way. And so there was music. Right after high school with my brother, that fell apart after a couple of years, you know, hard work. I
got
the acting bug at 30 years old. This is when I started pursuing acting. And then between trying to find jobs and this, that, and the other, standing jobs, acting, small acting jobs or whatever, I just got really bored, and I there was something inside of me that was hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember the first time I went to Whoopi, had a Hobby Lobby of Hobby Lobbies. It's like crafty stores in the States. And I went and bought my first canvas and some paint. I was like, I'm going to go home and put this paint on this canvas. And it's going to be horrible. And again, I was 33 years old at the time. And I'd never painted a canvas.
Wow.
Really. 33.
Like.
And I remember going back to my apartment and painting it. And it was absolutely horrible. But at the time, I was like, I felt like I just discovered a tool. I was like, oh, me make art. You know, it's like, it just, the energy I got from it was such a dopamine hit. It hit me in a way where I wasn't getting that as I was, again, struggling to be an actor, because it is a struggle.
Yeah.
And I realized, like, oh, I can create. I don't need other people to. I can create my own.
Yeah. You know?
And I got addicted. You know, I don't have addicted personality, but I got addicted to that. So I just started doing it for me. I painted a lot. It looked like it was really bad, and I was painting on bad material, using bad material. And but it was always for me.
Yeah.
And so it was birthed through the other art thing that I was. The space that I had created with acting, it gave me the space to find painting.
Yeah.
And then as I went through life and I kept painting for myself, it grew with me like a child. It nurtured itself. It grew. And when we got to COVID and the acting thing shut down after getting to a successful point, my painting tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, I can take over.
Mm.
You've been nurturing me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just fell back on my art. I started painting my walls and I was locked down. Other people saw it. They wanted me to come paint their walls. And I've been selling canvases for a while. So it's just something that I nurtured on the side that took over. And then the crazy thing is, like, I fully immersed myself, as you know, as an artist.
Yeah.
I even stopped acting for 4.5 years and just concentrated on my mural business and my art.
Wow.
And then acting tapped me back on the shoulder again and said, hey, I'm here too. Let's just do both, man. So yeah, again, they just art, nurturing art and being, I think what's really important here, I think it's the key ingredients. I think it's a part of being brave and being very ignorant, which I think I'm equally both. And I think that's the perfect ingredients to put myself in a situation to let those two things, because I never fall to the struggles.
Yeah.
Because there's been lots of financial struggles and other struggles and families and divorces and this, that, and the other. I am immune to letting that stuff stop me.
That sounds so lifeful. I mean, this is life. I mean,
yes.
Yeah. And I really like the way, because for me, you know, it's not just always going smiling and earning money. Mm-hmm. It's could be also the definitely opposite of earning money. I mean, you can, and this is for an artsman or for people who work in arts. I mean, this is what life is life. I mean, you know, this is not always smiling. It's not always sun shining. It's everything. And I like the way I feel life, you know, and I appreciate even times when I don't feel good, you know, at the end. So I like that.
Can I just add quickly?
Yeah, please.
That I think my sensitivity and my vulnerability to like be okay with the pain.
Yeah.
As well, okay with the fruits and the happiness. Like I'm equally acceptable to both.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's, and I'm able to put that into my art.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
but my paintings are now like, because I've gone through a lot, losing my mother to COVID and losing my family and this, that, and the other. I am now a better actor, not because I'm acting, because I have these real emotions to put on display through art. And so I'm okay not always getting the financial reward because I'm getting the creative nurturement reward. Now, I would love for that financial thing, and it has turned around, but I would love for it, like it really, especially in the art world. Hopefully that taps me on the shoulder too. It's like, hey, we got you. At least we're going to take care of your kids, which would be more important than myself. But yeah, anyways, I just wanted to say that being sensitive is what allows me to be an artist, I think.
You told us before, you told me before, but I would like to get more information about that. How has living, maybe we can jump into that again, in Europe shaped your perspective as an American artist? I mean, especially in these days. I don't want to put all the signs to Trump, but this is really special, and I really like the way you still work in Europe, and even, you know, Germany has got these big problems right now because a producer told me she's responsible for TV commercials, and she told me when you shoot more than 2 days, it's more cheap to move to Poland and to shoot there as in Germany. And this is what makes me, I get crazy. I mean, I like to go to Poland and to shoot their commercial. I don't care. But on the other hand, this is, it's more expensive to shoot here in Germany. And so there's so many different changes right now, you know. I was listening to a client of us, or of our agency. She's still living in Los Angeles, and she told me that they still spent some taxes into the fall of Hollywood to let the people more come back to Hollywood again, because they still know everybody is moving around and going to Atlanta, and so they hope that they will come back and stay there.
Yeah, well, personally, I didn't like LA, so I hope it just go back there. I just did not like LA. I got a lot of good friends there, and the weather is amazing.
Yeah,
and California as a state is a beautiful state. But quickly, like the difference between like the states. Okay, there's two different answers to this question.
Yeah.
As I told you, I'm a little bit ignorant and a little bit brave, and those two things are a good balance for me. I am also immune to political states, like mind states. Like I like to meet people individually.
Yeah.
And I just hear white noise when it comes to political stuff. Like it's not something that interests me. And I try to live life on an individual status. My country is out of its mind right now politically, and it has been for a decade or more, and it's just tries to keep overdoing itself. Like it's crazy. But so for me, living in Europe the last 10 years is that part is great, to be away from that kind of, but I'll be honest with you, like I feel like being in Europe there's more noise about how crazy the U.S. is politically from this perspective than when you're in it. Because you hear all this stuff, and like even I get anxiety hearing all this crazy stuff, and I'm like, gosh, I got to go to Alabama next week. That's going to be weird. And because I'm thinking about all this stuff I've heard for months and months and months. And I get there.
And then?
There's nothing.
Interesting.
The people are fine. I'm like, where's all this noise coming from? You know, and I'm like,
that's a nice point of view.
It's sad at the same time too, because even I fall victim to the noise, because I'm getting there and thinking it's crazy and it's this and that. I get there and I'm like, no, everything is fine, Bob. Everybody's calm. Everybody's nice to each other. It's just, where's this noise coming?
Propaganda.
Thank you. I didn't want to say it. I want you to say it. But yeah, it's, but at the same time, like I said, what I like about Europe is I can have deep conversations with people here, and I can't really have that back home. Now we're stepping into territory that we could talk for hours about and, you know, avoid that. But like, as I said, I hope things don't go back to Atlanta, to LA, because everything moved from LA to Atlanta because of the same thing, tax incentives. It's cheaper for production. The production company's smart. I mean, it's only going up. Budgets are getting bigger. And so they're always looking for ways to get around that. I think my heart is broken for Europe, particularly Germany. It absolutely breaks my heart. Because in the States, the production companies film in different states to save money on taxes and this, that, and the other. But you're still under union contracts, so the artists themselves are protected. Now they found Europe. They found Europe a long time ago. Now more things are coming to Europe. And it's not just the taxes and stuff they're escaping. They're taking the actual, if you're a painter, they're taking the actual colors of paint and completely fucking them because they can. And it's the most disheartening, soul-crushing thing that I've ever experienced in Europe. It was one of the main reasons I walked away 4.5 years ago.
Wow.
I was like, you know, I can go paint a wall and financially secure myself. I remember when I first moved to Germany, I met this Cologne actor. He was a really nice guy. He does a lot of German commercials,
Yeah.
And he told me he works all the time. And he goes, dude, if you're looking to be an actor here, you're in the wrong place. He goes, there's like 4% of us.
Yeah.
As German actors that can actually survive off.
That's
the
truth.
Yeah. We do. Yeah. And at the time I'm like, that makes no sense. Like I didn't even like resonate. I was like, okay, I get the struggle's hard. The struggle's hard for all of us. But as I got into the business here myself, I just nauseating. And I just can't, even to this day, I can't wrap my brain why we're in 2025, at the end of 2025, and it's still this way. How do you can't, there's AI, and it's just scary. But how do you not take care of actors here?
Yeah.
How do you not do that? You know, and you know, I think there's karma involved in that, in the end product and a lot of things. But the system here, the not really having a true union in a union country, which is bizarre.
This BFFS.
Yeah, it's production companies now, even American, they're guilty of it. Like I'm thankful that I get to work here and I get to work on these projects, but it's a tough pill to swallow to be that expendable to them. To be like, I know, because it's like, you know, there's a $1 billion project out there, a $1 billion project. They have the money to take care of everybody involved. And it's disheartening to go, yeah, but we're not going to because we don't have to. And this goes back to me being very sensitive. Like, I would do it for free. Like, I would do the art for fucking free. It's not about that. It's about where the energy is. If you're a disgusting, despicable company that being like, no, we can fuck you, so we're going to, then I have a real genuine problem with that. And it met, like I said, like I told you, when I go on a film set, if the energy's there. But since my return to the film industry, which thank you so much for opening these doors for me.
Nah,
it goes both ways. Like, you know, it's
all about you. It's maybe both, but the end, it's you. I mean, and it, I told you when we first met, we are partners in crime. I've never would like to act like an manager and you will be hired. No, it's on the same level. We're on the same equity. I mean, this is, you know, this is, we are partners. Mm-hmm. And this is what I always talk to everyone of us. It's a big family. Mm-hmm. And I like to share everything. I mean, I really want to know how you feel. Are you at the end? It's your decision to get into the casting or not. I mean, this is, you know, and we can just offer and we can do everything behind them, but at the end, it's always you. And this is so important because I still missed it all the time here in Germany with agencies. Mm-hmm. They just called, yeah, we get something for you. Okay, and they said, how many days? One? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can pay less than 1,000. I said, sorry, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, no, we have to do it in a different way. So more like in partners in crime.
Well, this is why I thank you, because like I told you, I like going on the film set, it's all about the energy for me. And I had previous German agents, some good, some difficult. I'll just leave it at that. But I wasn't interested in dealing with the difficult anymore. Like, I just, you know, I'm 48 years old and I'm like, you know, I can just go paint walls and be very happy. You know what I'm saying?
This is so good. But that brings me to that question. I mean, what does creativity mean to you on days when you're tired, inspired, or doubting yourself?
I've learned not to force it.
Mm-hmm.
It's being able to accept how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when I'm down, like, it's the truth. Wait, when you're in your worst spot or I'm in a worst place, I make my best art.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that. I hate that that's the math that the universe developed. But that's the math that works. But it's not like I can do it every single time. I go through long periods where I don't paint at all. You know, if I'm not feeling it, it's not there. Just like the acting. I went through 4.5 years of not being a part of it, and I'm totally content. But the weird thing is every time I walk away from something, I walk away from painting walls, I do body paintings, I do watercolor paintings, I do canvas paintings, I do every medium you can think of. And I'll stop doing things for a while. I'll stop body painting for a while, or I'll stop mural painting for a while. And when I come back to it, somehow or another, I got better by not doing it.
Wow.
By not doing
it. Wow.
Because I get tunnel vision. This is why I could never be one of those actors that just, there's acting and my life's going to revolve around acting and I'm going to go down that tunnel of acting. I'd go crazy. I'm too sensitive. I get overwhelmed and nothing becomes real. And the same with art, same with mediums. I step away, I come back somehow or another. I'm like, okay, what happened? How did I get better? And the same with, and the truth of it is like, I've lived more life.
Mm-hmm.
That's my teacher. Mm. It's not the painting.
Mm.
It's the living more life. And then I'm able to put that into my painting. I'm able to put that into my acting. I'm able to put that into the music I'm getting back into my brother. I'm getting to, my son is playing the piano now.
Wow.
He's playing Ludovico.
Wow.
At 10 years old.
Wow.
It's nuts. He's blowing my mind.
Wow.
And I'm like, dude, you're 10. You should not be playing Beethoven and Ludovico. Like, what's going on right now?
Cool.
And the same thing. Like, he's had some unfortunate dealing with his parents separated, and and he channels that into art. And I, and for me, I love that. I love that. That's the way. So I don't let my emotions define me, but I let my emotions guide me.
Mm.
So,
oh, wow, nice.
Force things.
Nice, yeah. Nice. And two more things. Now we are around 40 minutes. Sure. It's so interesting. And I really, really thankful for that conversation and your open heart. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you two more things. The first, I forgot, of course. Let me think about that. What is your... no, I forgot.
I love it. I guess like my brain,
Jesus Christ. Yeah, because
all the time
I was so into it and I really liked the last sentence you said. And
yes,
as I was thinking about that and then lost my question. What's coming? What's coming next into your Jeffrey Lee Hellman life? What could we expect? What's the big next thing?
I have no idea. And that's the way I live life. Like for me, like no plans, the unknown is I have no idea what's coming next.
But there's a big movie coming.
There, okay. Now something that has been done now.
Yeah. Maybe that
this year, there's two things. Again, thanks to the collaboration with you and your energy and got me re-inspired. It's like, there's people I can actually work with again and I can do this. I was cast in The Hunger Games, which is a very, let's just say it's a very incredible thing to return to the acting world too. Mm. What an amazing thing to walk away from something for 4.5 years and like, you want to go back? Sure. You want The Hunger Games? Sure. Like, everything that we've talked about empathetical energy and creativity and sensitivity and The Hunger Games with this and more. I never would have imagined that such a big budget film could even like hold the space for eye to eye energies.
Mm.
And this comes from the director, Francis Lawrence.
Wow.
I remember, we both know, I didn't tell the others how I got this job. I got my little breakdown. Sometimes actors get these little breakdowns where it's a very big project, but they don't give you much material because they're protecting whatever. And you get these one lines and you have to do it and you can't pull anything from it. And it's just very frustrating and difficult. But I'm at a point to myself, I was like, I haven't done acting in 4 years. I can critique painting walls. I'm not going to do it this way. I'm going to write my own thing,
what
I own feel, take my own life because I can relate to this character. I'm going to shove it in the audition and be like, I'm going to get no either way. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
This is what opened the door, right? And then when I had the call back with Francis, I remember speaking with him. I don't know. It felt like an eternity before we even got to the callback. Yeah, it's talked about Berlin and the life and loves and this, that, and the other. And then we finally see, he goes, finally, let's do the lines. And I did the lines one time. He gave me one little note. We did it again. He goes, okay, thank you. I was like, we spent like maybe 4 minutes doing the audition, but we spent.
That is the most important.
But I realized, after I got to set and I met all the other cast members, which is a huge ensemble.
Yeah.
We all just, it's almost like we all knew each other.
Mm.
Just everybody was so great.
Mm.
And working with Francis and him trusting, like my experience was like, he's very open. He's very, whatever you bring to the table, he doesn't give a lot of notes. He just kind of lets you play and be organic. And it's, for me, that is everything I could ever dream as an artist to be in such, and that's why I never thought this kind of level would ever get there. But his artistry to me is, could not be any better on any level of art, because he knows how to mix the energies.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an artist knowing what color palette works.
Mm-hmm.
If I take all these different colors and put them all together, it's going to work. I have no idea what that was. But that is his gift. It's like, and we all were just gooing over how we loved each other.
Yeah.
And it comes from Francis and his ability. So
that.
Very fortunate, very lucky. And right after I booked that, I booked a film called The Wait with Russell Crowe and Ethan Hawke. Mm. And we actually, even though I booked that second, we shot that first.
Mm.
And what a great way to, after not, like I said, not working for so long, to go in there and step back into the ring and face to face with Russell Crowe.
Mm.
That's the best way to warm up for the Hunger Games. And which was also amazing. I had one goal. I was like, I just want to see if I can hold my energy with Russell Crowe.
And
like, it just like, I did, that was my, I was like, I'll know where I am if I can not, definitely not overshadow him, but definitely not what, just be eye to eye with him energetically.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was a test for myself, you know? And, yeah, I got there, much like I said, when I walk away from painting and I go back and I paint again, I'm like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
I had that same feeling. I was like,
cool.
I was right there.
Perfect.
He's right there.
Wow.
And then Ethan with his passion was beautiful. And so it's been a, it, you know, and as you know, there's been an avalanche of new opportunities that are rolling in, and some things we got close that didn't quite get, but there's, you know, we're in a dead period now, but there's going to be another start.
Definitely.
Year.
Yeah.
And we're building something special. I'm very thankful to be a part of it.
Thank you, Rudy.
And yeah.
So good.
So I have no idea where this is going.
Yeah.
I know it's going somewhere.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So finally, when you hear the title of this podcast, So Tickt Berlin, yeah?
Mm.
How does Berlin tick for you?
Well, translation for a tick in the States is not very good. It's those little bugs that suck your blood and can give you disease. So that's my, where my initial brain goes to it. But please translate that for me again. Like, what was that?
Or other, in other words, you have anything to give to the audience? I mean, you said so much, so many nice things. I'm really inspired and I really like that. But maybe is there something you would like to share?
To listeners. God, there are so many things, but the intuitively the thing that comes to mind for me is will always be just kind of accept the hard parts of life.
Mm.
You know, that's as I've gotten older, I was horrible at it when I was young, but as I've gotten older, I've learned that accepting is a really good teacher, because if you accept, then you can hold space for new things and let go of that space of, So maybe that's coming from a personal place of some life experiences I'm going through right now, but, acceptance is a big thing in my life. Everybody try to look at everybody in the eye and don't listen to the propagandas, the outside noise.
Yeah.
Individually is where we meet and we connect and we should stop listening, letting the dark energies kind of puppeteer us in the wrong directions.
Wow. So that was what I was saying. Jeff. So really, we have to see each other again. I mean, we do that for sure, but I just want to let you part on this podcast again. At the end, we still have almost 1 hour of talking, and it was really, really interesting. Yeah, it was really, really, we were into it and appreciate that. Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
I wish you all the best. I mean, stay healthy. This is the first and the most necessary thing to get into the next level, whatever it takes. Thank you so much. And
thank you for having me. Yeah.
For you outside, stay confident and cheerful. Für euch da draußen bleibt zuversichtlich und fröhlich.
Vielen Dank.
So tickt Berlin. Dein Podcast von und mit Nikolai Tegeler.